Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast from a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast and to be doing a Quarks bar while doing it. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. The drinking helps me lose my inhibitions, which is why I would be embarrassed. I don't expect to be embarrassed in another 10 minutes.
Have you already started?
Yeah, started a little bit.
Yeah, I had a moment in the corner store when I was buying my provisions for today's episode that I may come to regret, because I was there thinking about maybe getting some apple cider, some hard cider. And I had a can of that in my hand, and then I looked up, and there was a 4-pack of microbrew called Banana Bread Beer. And I thought it would be funny to have apples and bananas. So I got that.
God, I just don't understand you sometimes.
So I'm going to try this Banana Bread Beer for the first time.
I hope it's great. I don't hope it's bad. I'm not making fun of you. Did you get a sixer of this, or just get one?
It was a 4.
Okay.
It was sold as a 4-pack, and I don't have whatever bone that is that other people have in my head where you can take one out of a 4-pack and walk up and make eye contact with the person selling it.
Yeah, I don't have that either. Instead, I have the bone that buys 4 or 6 of a thing. I'll have the first one and not like it, and then it'll stay in my pantry for 4 years.
Wow. If I don't like it, I will accelerate through the remaining 5 to not let them go to waste.
Man, I've been leaving a half a beer behind sometimes. I'm just not consuming a thing I don't like if I don't like it, you know?
Well, Banana Bread Beer, surprisingly pretty good. I think you would like this in a beach context.
What?
Yeah.
A Banana Bread Beer is a light and crushable?
It is light. It is crushable, Adam.
Give me, on a scale of 1 to 10 bananas, how much of that banana is coming through?
I would say that it's about a 3 on the banana and like a 2 on the beer flavor.
Are you going to have a second one on the show? I guess that's the real test, right?
I don't have a choice. It's the only thing I have left because I drank my one apple cider.
You're stuck with it.
I'm stuck with you, Adam. And we are cruising into a whole new decade. Who'd have thought that The Greatest Generation would span more than one decade?
I certainly didn't. I mean, this weird experiment has turned into a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Do you have any new decade resolutions?
Lately, my mind and my focus has been so narrowed to the week that I'm living that it has been very hard to think very far into the future. And I know this is a time of year where many people do, but I feel like if I look past the week that I'm in, I'm just going to drive myself crazy. I'm in that kind of headspace lately.
Right, because you've got the whole move coming up. You've got a lot of I's and T's that need crossing in the extreme short term. And we're recording this a couple of weeks ahead of its release, but, you know, like, I'm going on a holiday trip. Like, I don't think either of us is particularly hoping to do a lot of work during the holiday season.
Right.
So we're trying to pre-tape and pre-edit And that kind of turns this time of year into an end run. And you stack that on top of your impending out-of-state move, and that's a lot.
Yeah, I'm working as fast and as hard as I can because I know there's going to be a period of weeks where I can't because all of my shit will be in a box or something.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Exciting. What about you, Ben? When you look at 2020, what do you see through those smudged glasses?
Keeping my glasses less smudged is one thing that I aspire to on an ongoing basis. So that might be a good thing to look at for 2020
uh-huh.
and the 20s in general.
Yeah.
I lost a bunch of weight in 2019, and I would like 2020 to be about being just in better shape in general and also keeping an eye on that. Like, because I think it was mostly through studied indifference and inaction that I gained weight that I didn't want.
Yeah.
That I put it all on. So a 2020 where I maintain, I don't, fluctuate radically in pant size would be nice.
People don't concentrate enough on maintenance in favor of either gaining or losing a certain thing, you know?
Yeah.
Maintenance is healthy.
Yeah, and I'm literally, like, I'm paying attention to this stuff for the first time in my life, so I'm lucky to be saying that, but...
Sure. Yeah, we all...
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't think anything major... My wife and I are trying for having a house sometime soon that isn't a tiny little rental.
So many of those words are usually followed by baby, Ben, that I sharply inhaled before the end of that sentence. My wife and I are expecting to live in a house.
I proposed getting pre-approved for a mortgage.
Uh-huh. My wife has pulled the goalie in her fantasy hockey league.
Yeah, so that's like 2020 is a year that is as likely as any so far to happen. But it's really scary to me because she and I have very different approaches to major purchases. And I get really stressed out and just, you know, I commit hard and fast, and she really likes to consider every option and, you know, is willing to let an opportunity pass if she's not 1,000% sure.
Yeah.
And it takes her a much longer time to get to 1,000% sure than it does for me. So I'm, you know, bracing myself for the challenges of that as well.
Yeah, man. I think I know the feeling. And these decisions last for years and years, so it feels like you need to get them right. And that is a kind of pressure.
Yeah. Well, man, I know you've got a lot on your mind. So why don't you crack a beer and we can do our favorite thing, which is sitting around yammering about a Star Trek episode we just watched.
The pod heals, Ben. Maybe this one will do the same. It's Deep Space Nine. Season 5, Episode 20, Ferengi, Love Songs.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
With a title like that, I expected more music, didn't you?
You thought it might be like that episode of Buffy that's a musical?
That would have been great.
Turns out Ferengi Love Songs are... a lot of crying. There is a ton of crying in this episode.
There's so many Ferengi in this episode that it made me really appreciate Armin Shimerman's performance as Quark. That's not to say any of the guest stars are bad to any extent, but Armin Shimerman's been wearing the loaf for years and years. He has practiced in how to do what he does. One of the things I noticed in this episode is how much of the lower part of his mouth moves compared to his top. Like, when he's enunciating, articulating words, like, it's his bottom lip moving because his top teeth are so big.
Yeah.
It looks really hard.
One of the things about the Ferengi teeth is that it is definitely causing all of these actors to have to kind of consciously... do things with their mouths to keep them closed when they're not talking.
Yeah.
They look like they got a mouth full of marbles, and just the fact that they're elocuting through all that crap that's being stuck in their mouths is really impressive.
I mean, I think it's one of the reasons why Moogie was recast. The actor who played her in the last Moogie episode was like, can't do the loaf. Sorry.
Wow, I didn't even realize.
So they brought in Cecily Adams to play her this time around, who was great, but I wonder, it's hard to cast guest stars on these shows for so many reasons. I mean,
yeah.
Let alone the discomfort that an actor goes through in just wearing the prosthetic.
Yeah. This episode opens with very strong season 1, episode 1 vibes. They show Quark like standing, just looking quite dismayed outside the bar, which sounds and looks sort of like the scene of a battle.
Who's winning the war?
It's too early to tell.
Like there's smoke and flashes and crackling noises back there. And we are led to understand by a conversation he has with Dax that the bar has been totally overrun or occupied by Cardassian voles.
This is a time where, depending on the sound effects you use, you can really change the feeling of a scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to make it too cartoonish. You don't want to make it sound like a vacuum and a thump.
Yeah.
You don't want to sound like they're screaming and being vaporized like they...
Right, you don't want to ruin people's TV dinner.
Yeah, so I really think that they tried to get the middle ground here, sound-wise. But you can imagine there's a version of this that is terrifying.
Let's rock!
I was trying to tell my wife about how the new Watchmen show is good.
Yeah.
And she, to my shock, she agreed to watch an episode of it with me. And I had forgotten that first episode features a scene where they attempt to storm a barn house and have to take cover behind the corpses of cows.
Yeah.
Which are getting machine gunned apart. And my wife is sitting there, like, you know, pushing her dinner away from her.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate steak night.
It's like, oh, God damn it. Come on.
That show
like
this is great.
But that is such an atypical, like, needle-pegging scene in that show.
Yeah.
That's not standard issue. I mean, it's crazy that that's in the first episode, given how crazy that scene is.
It's excessive in that way that comedy can be, where something starts a little funny, and then it gets less funny the more you do it, but then it gets more funny when you right. do it for an excessive amount of time.
Yeah.
That seems like how sound design works, too. Like, if they were just filling up one cow full of artillery, it would be gross and bad, but that they fill up 80 cows,
yeah,
it somehow circumnavigates gross into something better.
Not for my wife.
Yeah.
What's the one thing that can cheer Quark up at a moment like this, Adam?
We're getting married.
Didn't this episode make you think a lot about mental health and your own personal mental health? Because Quark is depressed. He says as much. Whether or not he is another... It's a conversation for another time, but...
Well, there's like situational depression and clinical depression, and I think he's depressed because he's been in the ball-kicking machine for a long time.
What many people don't realize about those who are experiencing depression is that other people's happiness does not generally have an effect.
Wish I was dead.
And Ram and Lita are like, you are going to love this. You're going to feel so much better once you see how we have paired off and found love.
Yeah. Ram and Lita not exactly taking things slow.
No.
I don't think we've seen a single date go down, but now they are betrothed to one another. And this does not cause Quark to jump for joy on his psychoanalyst couch that he happens to have in his living room.
Yeah.
And so... Ram suggests that because he's feeling crummy, he should go home for an extended visit with Maduk.
Because when a person's feeling bad, family is often the answer. Clearly, Quark's family does not prescribe to the 3-night rule that you and I know and love, because he goes back to visit Moogie on Ferenginar open-endedly.
He surprises her with the visit. She's not given any advance warning that he's coming.
Yeah.
And I think, is this the first time we've seen him wear a raincoat?
Oh, yeah.
Because Ferenginar is always rainy.
Yeah.
But Ferengi are always wearing, like, pretty elaborate clothing that doesn't seem super rain-friendly. So
yeah,
I liked that he was bundled up in this.
Not a lot of wicking fibers on the Ferengi, it appears.
No. So he schleps into his childhood bedroom to drop his stuff and is shocked to find that his mom has kind of redecorated, turned it into more of a guest room than a shrine to her fully grown 40-year-old son.
Yeah, there's like a Nordic track and a home office.
Yeah, the printer is on the floor because there isn't really an appropriate piece of furniture to put it on.
It's very, very disappointing.
But also, well within her rights to do it because he has been grown and out of the house for a long time. And, you know, when you grow up, you have to put away childish things.
Yeah, also, he hasn't been a great family member to her.
Yeah, and he's putting stuff away. He opens the closet, sticks something in, and
he opens the door. I can't believe it's a man.
Mark, what are you doing here?
That is the hilarious reveal that Grand Nagus Zek and Mayor Du are stashed in the closet.
This really feels like a episode of a season that is really paying attention to its budget, because the closet becomes a transporter room throughout the episode, and yeah, you never see the effect. People just appear in the closet.
They are not bothering with the effect. If this was season one of TNG and they were hiding the transporter effect every time, people would go insane.
Yeah, you don't even see a glow from behind the door. It makes me wonder what constraints that René Auberjonois had to go through for this. This is yet another episode directed by him.
I think he directed 8, and this is his 6th.
Yeah, the reveal is that Zek is there because he and Moogie are in love, a love that began at a tango tournament that she gave him winning advice for.
They really schmoopy each other, these two.
Does anyone know about this?
There's way more nose play than ear play with them. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I wonder if the Zek earloaf is so...
so fucked out?
Yeah, well, I wonder if it's, like, delicate because it's so bumpy and lumpy.
If you're Zek, aren't you getting umox on the reg? Like, to the point where your shit is just totally numb? Maybe that's why he switched to the nose.
He's got the kung fu grip problem, but for his ears.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look at those things. They are pretty ragged.
Sorry, baby, I just can't get there in your pussy because I've been fucking with my ears my whole life. Do you mind umoxing me off?
Yeah.
Back on Deep Space Nine, the B story is the Rom and Leeta betrothal. And this is one of those deep B stories that wraps up like well ahead of the A story because the episode loses interest in it. But the basics of it are Rom is kind of converting to Bajoranism. He's taken to wearing the Bajoran earring.
Rom is not your traditional Ferengi male.
I guess not.
And Dax kind of as an ally to the Ferengi people, sort of no true Scotsman's him, where she's asking like how Leeta is going to conform to his belief system as a Ferengi, and you know, this is stated very innocently as Dax just asking questions, but leads to Rom nearly ruining a good thing for himself.
Can you remember another conversation between Rom and Dax?
You're probably the least Ferengi-like Ferengi I've ever met.
I think that Dax... the implication is that Dax has spent a lot of time with Quark and Rom because of all of her late-night tango hijinks.
And has been a member of many cultures over her centuries of existence. So I bet that's like a natural conclusion for her to draw. Like, coming from a place of centuries of life experience than her experience knowing Ramen anyway.
It's amazing how she can seem super wise and super naive at the same time.
You would expect her to be more condescending or Guinan-like in her in her takes, but she's never written that way.
She is not written like Guinan at all.
Yeah.
But Ram is like, oh shit, I better like go get like a prenup written up. I got to go see my family attorney because I never even thought about the fact that Lita's not going to be nude and unemployed while we're married.
So there's 1,000 different episodes on television of oh no, my mom is in love with my boss or something, but this doesn't feel like any of those.
No. The relationship by itself doesn't really offend him, and only later in the episode do they even like speak to the kind of scandalousness of it, because she is she's the only example of a Ferengi woman we have on an ongoing basis on this show, but we're led to understand that she's extremely unconventional in many ways, in a way that would probably be like politically inconvenient for Zach if it was public knowledge.
Sure.
But they have a great bond with each other, and like that part of it doesn't really bother Quark. It's not until the idea that there might be a come up for him in breaking them up that he starts to really reject what they've got.
I mean, the way that the A and the B story are so alike in this episode is that they're about people in love with each other who are imperfect fits.
Right.
And where Ram and Lita are concerned, Ram needs to make a decision about how much of his culture to inject into his own marriage. O'Brien reviews what is tantamount to a Ferengi prenup, and wisely tells him that there's no fucking way that Lita's going to sign something that onerous.
Well, it's your life, but I think you're making a big mistake.
It's not just a prenup. It's referred to as a WPNP, the waiver of property and profit.
Yeah.
And it stipulates that at such time as the marriage ends, like anything that is hers is his and anything that's his is his. Like, it's a real fuck you.
What's really interesting about this contract and its reason for existence, and the reason that Ram wants to use it, is his backstory with his first wife. And these two scenes are ones that I thought a lot about the order of, because I wonder how different it would feel to go through that scene with O'Brien talking about that contract if before that scene you got the moment of Ram revealing that he's scared of making the same mistake with Lita that he made with his first wife. And that really incites it. But instead, in the episode, it's you get to understand the contract first, and then you follow it up with the reason that Ram has in encouraging Lita to sign it.
Yeah, he's definitely not following the Brené Brown TED Talk thing of be vulnerable with your loved ones.
Yeah.
If he laid his cards on the table, she would understand what was motivating this and maybe not just react to it like it's a thing he's doing to her.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
I don't know what that's like, though.
Yeah. She throws this iPad right back in his face.
Sign the WPNP.
Never.
Then the marriage is off.
You bet it is.
I think when you jump into marriage this quickly, it is very easy to call it off. Just as fast, right?
Yeah, we learned at 5 minutes into the episode that marriage was on, and then 14 minutes into the episode that marriage was off. So hard to feel terrible about this, but wanting Ram to get something this good seems like what they're counting on for this to carry any weight for us.
Right. Dinner at Moogie's has Quark and Zek and her around the dinner table, and Quark is attempting to butter Zek up. He's got an angle, and the angle is if he can just butter him up, possibly, he may be in a position to reinstate his business license.
Forget it, Quark.
Right, and the quotient of shame that this connotes is a little unclear, because the first words that pass between Quark and Zek in the beginning of the episode are like, what the hell are you even doing on Ferenginar? You're not even welcome here. But now it doesn't seem like it doesn't really seem like Quark is so. It's not like Worf's discommendation where he can't even show his face around other Ferengi. Like he can leave the house safely,
right?
So yeah, but Zek's position is the FCA were the ones that revoked your license, and it's really like a bureaucratic matter. I can't be seen to, you know, engage in acts of nepotism like getting my girlfriend's son his business license back.
Yeah, and what's worse is that Moogie won't back him up, at least in public.
This is when, in frustration, he heads back to his room and the transporter closet reveals...
What? FCA.
It's our second Jeffrey Combs episode in a row, Adam.
Yeah.
This time not as Wei-Yun, but as Brunt.
He's getting a lot of work, that Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah, he's nearly main cast, except for he's playing multiple characters.
Yeah.
And he is offering Quark a way back to having the business license.
You've got to put an end to their relationship.
You've got a deal.
This is a scene that made me really recognize the lighting challenges that a Ferengi represents. And it's Brunt's face especially that underscores this, because what he needs is an underlight.
Yeah, he's got very deep-set eyes.
His eyes are almost totally in the black, contrast-wise, here for a lot of this scene. And it's clearly a challenge on some sets to make sure an actor's face is well-lit.
Like, especially when he's in the closet super hard, because that, like, all the doors are lower than Ferengi head height.
Yeah,
for some reason. And so, like, you can't even get a light up above him,
right?
Necessarily.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you were talking before about how DS9 as a set is unique for its having a lid on it in all of its locations.
Right.
It's unclear how this is working on these Ferenginar sets and the challenges that those present.
I don't think that there are ceilings on these sets, but one thing I thought a lot about in this episode is how uncomfortable Meherdoo's life is.
Yeah.
Like, he lives in these buildings.
Yeah.
Like most of the doors are, like, waist tall for him.
Yeah, he's bent at the waist for most of the ep. That's not fun.
Can you imagine how fucking uncomfortable that would be if every day you had to stoop over to get through doorways?
Constantly getting things off of the top shelf for people.
Yeah. The next day is at the Negus's, like, audience chamber, where he sits there and has Ferengi businessmen kiss his ring all day, and unloads some bad stuff on the Negus. It's kind of like Quark's version of PsyOps is just telling the Negus things about his mother that would horrify Quark to learn about his mother.
Yeah.
And Quark has already learned most of this stuff, but the rumors are that she has not, in fact, given back all of the money that she earned when she was illegally obtaining profit, referring to an earlier episode with her, and that she has a scheme to use the money that she hid from the FCA to fund a women's rights movement on Ferenginar.
It's a horrifying thought.
It's interesting how, like, as soon as Quark becomes motivated in this way, in exchanging his mother's happiness for his own, like, all of that depression of the first quarter of the episode, it's not like he becomes happy. It's that neutrality and a mission gives him a reason for being, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's not, I don't think he's relishing this at all, but it's almost like in his neutral play on things, like, you get a sense that he's feeling better about himself because he's got this possibility.
Right. I think that he'd be really, like, gleeful if there was also a payday involved here. But instead, he's playing it pretty neutral, like, and competent, you know? Like, this is not one of those schemes that Quark embarks on that doesn't go well. Like, when he leaves the room, Zek is, you know, in a tailspin emotionally.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the, like, what Quark is playing at in the next scene, right? He's, like, waiting for his mom to come in, and when he hears her coming,
sort of gets into character as depressed and dejected Quark.
Yeah, he's manipulating his mom's sense of being a good mom for him.
And he's like, well, you wouldn't understand because I'm not allowed to earn profit in the Ferengi Alliance.
She's like, get in fucking line. I'm a woman on Ferenginar. Give me a break.
But also still loves him.
Yeah. Moogie agrees to talk to Zek on Quark's behalf about reinstating his business license.
And I thought that was interesting that he's on the chance that what he's being promised by the FCA doesn't work out, he is still pushing her, right? Like, he doesn't have to go back and pursue this scheme with her, does he?
But it's like one last stone unturned. Like,
right.
If he tries every available option, he's got to turn over the Moogie Stone.
Yeah. We get a little scene on the promenade. Odo and Worf are arguing about what to do with Martok because Martok threw someone from the second floor of the promenade and is now locked up in Odo's holding cell. And Worf would like him to be released. And Sisko agrees that he should be released. But also, Martok needs to understand that he's not living on a Klingon station where you can engage in martial disciplinary action like throwing a guy from the second floor of the promenade and not go unpunished.
Not to play Martok's advocate on this, but he has no depth perception. Is it possible that he like wanted to just throw him against the rail and instead threw him over the side? I think so. He should take this to court. This episode should pivot to Deep Space Nine court, and the last 20 minutes is in defense of Martok.
I wish they had fleshed that out a little bit more, because every time I've had a conversation with an attorney where I was fired up about something and I was like, let's have our day in court, you know, like I think we can really stick it to them or whatever. The attorney is like, don't be an idiot. Like, going to court is the last thing you want. It's expensive. Like, you know, big companies beat each other up in court over civil shit all the time, but like private citizens can't afford that type of shit.
Gotcha.
So what would it be? Would Martok have to hire his own attorney and pay for it somehow? Do the Klingons have money? Or are the Klingons also a post-scarcity, moneyless society like the Federation?
We've seen Klingon lawyers before, Ben.
I know. What the fuck? What would it look like?
You bring up such an interesting point about lawyers, and that is, like, I've got a few lawyers in my life as friends, and the one I've been friends with the longest has been a lawyer for maybe 15 years. He's been to trial maybe like 3 times. Why don't lawyers want to go to trial? It's what they were trained to do.
I mean, a lot of lawyers are not trial oriented. Like my wife, for example, has had phases of her career where she was in court all the time, but she is currently primarily a policy and contracts lawyer. So
I'm not disparaging your wife's great work in any way when I say this. Isn't the attraction to becoming a lawyer the trial? Isn't that like the inciting incident for going to law school? It feels like that's such a concentrated form of justice.
Yeah. But here's the thing. It's so expensive that it's not actually the best way to resolve differences that have a legal component.
A conference room is more efficient.
Like it's such a weird job. Like when I was mostly a freelance filmmaker, like there was a ton of incentive to like upsell my clients on things. Like, okay, we could do this video, but what I really think you should do is this video and then 2 shorter videos that you can share on social media. And I can do that for only this much extra, you know? And like when my wife was working for a litigation firm, and like a case that she was working on settled, like that was a celebration in her office. And I was always like, but don't you get like way more billable hours if it goes to trial? Like, isn't it better to go to trial from your standpoint? And like I understand that you're like happy on your client's behalf, but why are you celebrating? And I can't explain it. They just, you know, it's a weird thing about lawyers. I don't get it.
Yeah, I guess the end of any trial is a cause for celebration.
It's like the ethical oath that they take means something to them.
Huh.
I mean, going into freelance filmmaking, there's no Hippocratic... There's no swearing-in ceremony.
There's no ethics in podcasting either, so I think we found a career that's right for us.
What are you doing now?
Exactly. Sisko has Martok released and then rounds a corner to hear the crying that can only come from a Rom.
Yeah, Rom is cry working.
You never want to cry at work.
No.
Yeah, you wanna take that into the bathroom stall where it belongs. Or in the car. Cry in the car.
Yeah. You'd like a workplace that has enough bathroom stalls that you can go cry and nobody knows who's in there crying.
Yeah, doors to the floor. That's how you know you've got a good crying stall.
Yeah, like European style latrine would be great.
A European style crying latrine. We don't normally do remodels in office spaces, but on the 43rd floor of the Transamerica Tower, we're installing a new bathroom setup here. The client's chosen to go with a floor-to-ceiling door environment for their bathroom stalls. That way, anonymous crying is allowed for all of their 40 employees.
It's really the classic plumber's lament.
Yeah, you want a high-flow toilet in a crying stall.
Yeah.
Well, you want to flush those tears down.
A lot of ladies' rooms in Japan have just like constant water flow noise playing in them.
I like that.
To mitigate embarrassment.
That's why when I go to the bathroom in Japan, I always choose the ladies' room.
We should experiment with having just loud water noises on this program all the time to mitigate our embarrassment.
You know what? I'm going to call a shot here. Friend of the program, Ann Kilzer, send us another postcard and tell us about the bathrooms in Japan.
Yeah, what's up with those bathrooms? Yeah. Is that? I mean, I've only heard secondhand about this water flow noise. Maybe I'm talking out of my butt.
Yeah, but it takes a lot less than 15 flushes to get the stuff down over there. They know what they're doing.
Well, we're living really high on the hog in this country, you know. This is a bang, bang, bang of crying scenes, Adam, because we see Rom crying about how sad he is that the marriage is off. And then the camera floats up to a brief little scene with Kira and Lita, and Lita sort of trying to talk herself into this being the right choice. And Kira rejecting every argument that she makes to that end, and then Lita breaking down crying.
Does Nana Visitor break here? I am almost positive she does.
I think it is Kira's character thinking it's cute that Lita is this broken up about this obviously fleeting argument.
I love that moment lasts for maybe a half a second.
Yeah.
I love that, like, her whole body feels the absurdity of that.
Yeah, that is the moment of the episode, I feel like.
Yeah.
And then we're on Ferenginar, and Ishka is crying.
Yeah, triple crying.
Quirk comes in. Mom is very upset because Zach has left her and left her on a very insulting note. He called her a profit-hungry female.
I mean, he also accused her of trying to overthrow the government, which is an angle that Moogie was not expecting in the breakup, right?
How'd you find out about that? Do you look at my texts?
Kind of blindsided. Do you think you can see your ears if you're wearing Ferengi prosthetic, like out of your peripheral vision? Speaking of blindsided, I bet you can.
Yeah.
Like, hold your fingers up to the side of your head, like where Ferengi, like even touching where your headphones are.
I'm wearing headphones that I can see out of the side of my eyes.
Yeah, so you totally can.
That means you can't see stuff coming up behind you if you're a Ferengi.
Yeah,
that's the way to get at them.
That's how you know the Ferengi are predators and not prey.
Maybe that's why they use those whips, because they're like circling them over their heads. So if you get close, you might just get caught by that thing.
Yeah. Like that headcanon. Hey, is that Ferengi whip called a headcanon?
I believe it is.
Mm.
No sooner has she left the room than he blows in a FaceTime to Brunt.
You're smiling, Quark. Therefore, I assume your mother is not.
And gets his license reinstated. And then he goes in to try and cheer his mom up. And she's gone from the crying phase to the pissed off phase. And is in the process of sort of inviting him to leave and him accepting that invitation when the Negus calls.
The Negus has a job offer for Quark, and that is to be his first clerk. It's a job of some pedigree.
Yeah.
Quark is made to see that, like, his bar job doesn't have the shine of first clerk, and so he accepts.
This is kind of a chief of staff kind of position where he's there to help the Negus run the society, and this starts, you know, first day of work for Quark is in that same audience chamber, and they hash out an agreement about what Quark's role is going to be, and then he's handed the iPhone of power, and the Negus cannot remember his passcode.
All of the things that are happening between Quark and the Negus are things that you could conceive of as happening between he and Moogie, right? Like the, why doesn't my internet work? Like, well, what's your password? I don't know. like it's very old v. young conflicts happening, and it's super clear that Zek is slipping.
It's really scary to imagine the idea that the leader of a society could be mentally compromised in some way like this,
right,
and still have their hand on the levers of power.
Yeah, you just hope that there's some sort of check and or balance in play,
right,
here.
Yeah. Well, anyways, they finally get into the phone because Mayor Du knows the password also, but probably won't be that good of a advisor on account of he never says anything.
Yeah.
And Zek has just really lost the plot. He, like, cannot keep track of a thread of conversation for longer than two or three back and forths before he can't remember what they're talking about or why it's what they're talking about.
I mean, look at him. He's too old. He's too old for office, Ben. There should really be a limit, an age limit.
Yeah.
If you want to ascend to the highest reaches of Ferenginar.
Right. Like, you have to be at least 35 and no older than, I don't know, 70?
What's wrong with that?
That's a big window.
Yeah. Plenty of qualified people in that window.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Back on the station, Rom is sitting on the floor, and he's got his entire fortune on the table in front of him. He's like a little kid with all of his Matchbox cars, like all lined up in neat rows.
I thought you were going to say he's like a little kid selling chocolate bars so that his team could go to state.
Is that something you're familiar with? Did you have to do the door-to-door chocolate bar game?
Yeah, we did that when I was in school.
Yeah? Even though it was milk chocolate, you managed to hold your nose and sell it?
I did.
It was the first 40 to 50 seconds of your doorway pitch just apologizing for the idea that you're selling milk chocolate bars and not dark.
Hey, listen, I know that milk chocolate is trash. It's too sweet, it's too waxy, and doesn't really have much appeal to anybody. But how about this as a pitch? It's good for kids. If you buy this chocolate bar, I won't eat it. And also, my team will get to go to state.
Young man, I've never seen you before in my life, and I'm not sure you live in my neighborhood. Also, it's my family's dinner time. I'd like to ask you to leave.
Yeah, that plays right into all of my premature liberal guilt. So I apologize, sir. Adam, what's a more romantic place to get back together with somebody than the Jumja stick selling job that they just apparently got?
Is Lita working a second job now that the bar is closed, or is this her backup plan?
I don't know.
Quark's is closed. She's selling the Jumja stick.
Does the Bajoran provisional government have some sort of
Works Project Administration, where they can place you in other menial jobs while your remunerative employment is out of commission.
We could use a little more detail here.
I just wanted one line of expository dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not besmirching the long line of Jumja salespeople that we've seen.
It's honorable work to sell Jumja sticks because people are always getting their relationships back on track when they get one.
That's true.
And there's always money in the Jumja stand.
Ah, nice job. Cheers to you, Ben.
I don't even really like that show.
She is a friendly face. She's selling a shitload of Jumja.
It's unmade 25 grand last month. They're not going to fucking believe you. Fuck them. Fuck them.
And Rom appears. Like, here's what you don't want to do. If you're in limbo with someone or if things aren't good, I don't think you surprise them at their workplace.
No.
But Rom does it because Rom doesn't have any concept of social graces at all. He tells her,
I gave all my latinum to Major Kira for the Bajoran War Orphans Fund.
Like, this is the loophole that he has. He doesn't have to split anything with her if he doesn't have anything at all to split.
I think that I have two problems with this. One, Rom's fortune or lack thereof is such a squishy concept on this show. Like, sometimes he's a fucking idiot who doesn't have a nickel to his name that Quirk can make fun of. Other times he's got great big piles of latinum that he can give away and in a grand romantic gesture. Two, just keep the money for like a down payment or something. Like you don't have to give it away for it to be okay for the two of you to get married without the MPNP or the WPP. M&P? WPNP?
WPNP.
Yeah, WPNP. Banana bread beer.
I agree with you. This is a part of life and culture on the station we need to know more about, because it seemed as though as soon as Rom took a Starfleet job, that the need to acquire that latinum was going to be a thing of the past.
The acquisition of wealth is no longer the driving force in our lives.
But we see Starfleets in Quarks all the time spending latinum. Where do they get it if they're not being paid by Starfleet?
Yeah. I just wish this was described a little bit at some point in some episode, because like, I love the idea that Starfleet is so rich that like post-scarcity like extends past its borders somewhat, where like you can have,
like, everyone's getting a UBI on Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, like Deep Space Nine is on like the Bajoran economy, and so everybody in Starfleet is just given like a credit card that has no limit, and Starfleet will honor all debts that they incur because it like doesn't matter at all.
No, I mean, I've got to argue against you on that. I think it has to have a limit, because here's the thing. I love the idea of the universe being so vast that you must integrate yourself in the financial culture of other worlds and races. Like, I think that's cool. But I don't think you can give a blank check to Starfleet's working in those areas. Otherwise, they would just take over, right? They'd have the biggest house on the Bajoran cul-de-sac. And all of a sudden, you've kind of spoiled the culture by financially being its leaders. Like, I think,
shit, dog.
Like, wouldn't you need a Bajoran credit card with a nominal limit? Like, a middle income limit.
What you need is a Bajoran per diem.
And who do I give it to?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
with a Bajoran per diem, you limit the amount, but it's generous enough that you don't feel constrained on a day-to-day basis.
Right. And it's the same way if you're working near Vulcan or if you're working near any other of these worlds. Like, it's just different. It's a different limit, it's a different currency. But the philosophy is the same. Like, no better, no worse. Just enough to exist.
You want to integrate into the culture, but you also want to, you know, keep a sense of the, you know, lifestyle that you're used to. If it's a poop in a hole culture, you might want enough in your per diem to afford a hotel that has the kind of toilet you're used to.
Poop in a hole culture, huh, Ben?
That's what I think the Ferengi are probably working with.
We have not seen a Ferengi bathroom, and we do not know if the doors go all the way to the floor.
Yeah, where do the Ferengi go when they need to cry? I bet you just go outside because nobody would be able to tell. You let the rain run down your face. It doesn't look like anything.
Yeah.
That's a private cry you could have right there.
Latinum rain.
So Ram and Leader are back together. And Quark comes home to his Moogie. Stress the fuck out. She's been watching the CNBC all day and knows that the markets are down all over for Ferenginar. And what Quark doesn't realize is that she has been sort of guy behind the guying Zek for a long time. She's the reason the Ferengi economy was doing okay at all.
She's not only wise in the way that props up the entire Ferengi economy, she also figures out that he's the one, along with Brunt, that sabotaged her relationship with Zek. And she's pissed. Yep.
Quark is her son, so she loves him, but also she is sick of his bullshit, basically.
Moogie is smarter and better and wiser and kinder than any other Ferengi that we know.
It's really amazing when you meet a parent that's so much better than their kids.
Yeah.
You wonder what that's about.
Yeah. And yet, it seems like at the end of every episode Moogie's in, like, she's made to make the ultimate sacrifice for the comfort of other people.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Yeah. That's some retrograde bullshit, Adam.
But there's some real danger here for Ferenginar because the market needs to be stabilized. This has the consequence of destroying millions of people's lives if it gets out that Zek is unfit for leadership.
Right.
When really, like, the removal of someone so unfit is probably better for everyone in the long run.
Right. Like, he may be, from Moogie's standpoint, a useful idiot, but what should be done post-haste is some sort of removal process.
Yeah.
That's where I sort of turn on her and Quark in this episode, because Brunt comes in to Quark's place of work the next day as he's desperately trying to first clerk this economic crash into submission. And Brunt is gloating.
Why are you picking on me? I've done everything you asked, haven't I?
And it doesn't really make sense that Brunt would be gloating initially, because what would be in it for Brunt for things to be going badly for Quark? And then he reveals his grand plan. Quark has been a pawn the entire time for Brunt to Game of Thrones his way into the Negacy.
Yeah, Brunt's happy in the way that many bad guys are before their evil plan comes to fruition. But yeah. Brunt knows the history of Ferenginar and knows that Zek's predecessor was assassinated along with his clerk. And he knows that that's a very real threat for Zek and Quark here.
This is a classic villain monologue, telling the plan before the plan has fully been realized.
I couldn't have done it without you. I feel almost grateful.
With Zek out of the way, it actually clears the path for Brunt to become the new Negus.
He even tries the throne on for size.
Yeah.
He looks good in that throne. I feel like this is a show where, like, that could be the end of the episode, too.
Yeah.
Like if Nurse Ratched can become the Kai, then why can't Brunt become the Negus?
Yeah. So Quark confides all of this to Moogie, and the second thoughts that he has about it, his conscience won't allow this to happen. This is an observation that Moogie has about her son. They both talk about the idea that there's two types of greed. There's Zek's type of greed, which is good for people in general, like the broad type of greed. And then there's Brunt's type of greed, which is only good for himself. And when put that simplistically, the choice becomes fairly clear about which one of the two is a danger to the most people.
It's a, do you want Gordon Gekko or do you want Charlie Sheen?
Yeah.
And so this is a bit of a smash cut to victory party, right? The conversation that Quark has with his mom cuts to Grand Negus Zek, Mayor Du, and Quark walking out of whatever meeting they had with the board of the FCA. And Zek was able to answer all their questions to their satisfaction. He's maintained his status as Negus,
And I guess the FCA is some sort of check on his power. Unclear to what extent that is true. And then Quark ushers in the person that helped him formulate all the advice he gave Zek, because Zek really credits Quark with this advice having been the way he preserved his political power. And this person comes in a hood and very unsurprisingly reveals herself to be Ishka.
All the advice I gave you today came from her.
Quark also admits to lying to Zek about the rumors about her. Those rumors about her wanting to overthrow the government, turns out, were unfounded, or at least founded by Quark falsely.
You know, like, Quark still has this first clerk gig, but makes the argument that the advice that he's able to offer is not terribly valuable compared to what she is able to offer. And she says, like, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I do think women should have equal rights, and I'm never going to back off of that opinion. But if you'll have me back, I would like to be your special lady friend, and I can also help you continue the project of running Ferengi society.
It's a weird anti-resolution here, right? Because All of the game pieces are put more or less back into their original places at the beginning of the episode, including the Brunt piece.
Right.
Who, during the button on the episode, like, Quark packs for home, things have been resolved, he and his mom appear to be okay. They have a cute moment having to do with Quark's action figures. But when Brunt beams into Quark's beaming closet, he makes it clear that he is still going to be a concern. He's going to be looking out at Quark in a way that he wants to entrap him once again.
Yeah.
And one assumes that he's going to be doing that very same thing to Zek, right?
Brent stays the villain of Ferengi society and the villain in Quark's life, and is perfectly happy to do that. Like, his scheme failed, but it didn't cost him a thing.
No, nothing really changed at the end. We're back to one.
We're back to one, and that's a very TV ending.
Yeah.
It's like a one that we didn't know was one, though. Right. I guess Quark has his business license back, right? Does Quark get to take those signs down in his bar?
I think so. I think that's the deal.
We'll have to watch for that.
Did you like the episode?
You really want to do this here now? Okay, let's do it. Do it.
I did. I don't know why I liked it, but I kind of liked it. I mean, it was a nice light episode. How about you?
Any episode having to do with Ferengi, like, just looks like it should be dumb, and it's not trying to say anything sophisticated. But I think this episode says something sneakily sophisticated about how preventable it is for there to be conflicts between, you know, like, family members and lovers that have to do with cultural stubbornness. Because Remember, Rom's stubbornness about his culture was not coming from himself. Like, it was suggested by Dax, and then it just sort of spun him out of control into the kind of cultural stubbornness that broke up him and Lita. And the thing with Zek and Mugi is the same way. Like, Zek clearly doesn't prescribe to the sort of cultural stubbornness that would prevent having a relationship with Mugi. It's only when outside powers come in and interfere with that he's made to break up with her. Like, I really think he was okay with everything about Mugi up until other people knew about it. And that, I feel like, is a quality that people are aware of right now. Like, people our age getting into relationships with people of other cultures where the parents of those kids are hardline into whatever religion or culture that they belong to in a way that the kids don't.
Yeah.
And it's only through that injection of someone else's opinion that a conflict can take hold. And that's what this episode made me think about, is like, how often you're not really in conflict with the person you're with. You're arguing with them because of some outside force. It's unnecessary.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I had a good buddy whose wedding was only complicated because his wife's grandma really wanted some very traditional Jewish elements to be part of their wedding that they didn't, like, neither of them wanted it,
yeah,
and she super did. And they, like, the compromise was just to have those things happen on, like the day before,
yeah,
basically just for her benefit in a private, smaller ceremony. And, you know, like, their culture, other than that, is basically not different at all. So,
right.
like these things happen even when the differences are really minor.
I mean, this episode doesn't exist if all parties sort of hold fast,
right,
and are grounded in the confidence of their decisions and their feelings. And I think it is when characters don't feel those things, and moreover, when people don't feel those things, that you leave yourself open to these unnecessary entanglements.
Yeah, indeed. Well, do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages in the inbox, Adam?
It's one entanglement we get into every episode.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a promotional nature.
Hey!
And it's from our friends at the Seventh Rule podcast.
Whoa!
This is the podcast that was created by Siroc Lofton and Aaron Eisenberg and Ryan T. Husk that is still going strong. Here's the message. Attention Greatest Gen viewers, Jake and Nog created a new Star Trek podcast with sci-fi producer Ryan T. Husk called The Seventh Rule. With entertaining behind-the-scenes insights while reviewing DS9, after the tragic passing of our brother Aaron, we are continuing the show in his honor. Please subscribe to The Seventh Rule YouTube channel today and catch new episodes weekly. We have a ton of cool Trek stars on the show, and also check out our Patreon page. Thanks! And that message is from Siroc Lofton and Ryan T. Husk.
Wow.
This is a little peek behind the pod, is that we had been in some preliminary discussions with that show about doing some guesting between us, and it was right before Aaron Eisenberg's death, and
yeah, it was really crazy timing on that.
Yeah, I'm really happy to know that the show continues without Aaron. I can't imagine how difficult that's got to be, but I'm confident in Ryan and Siroc's ability to do that and to carry that on in his spirit.
Yeah, so give the Seventh Rule a go on YouTube and Patreon.
No other Star Trek podcasts may purchase advertising space on our show. I'm going to make that rule right now.
What the hell? What about Go Trek Yourself?
Go Trek Yourself can do that.
What about Mamre Alpha? What about Women at Warp?
All right, noted. With a couple of exceptions.
Okay.
That's what I'll say.
You really
want to advertise for our competition?
I think that a rising tide raises all starships, Adam.
Mm.
You can listen to those other shows at 1.5x, but you have to listen to ours at 1.0.
That's right. Well, check out the Seventh Rule over on YouTube and Patreon.
Adam, we have a second Priority One message. It is from Danielle, and it is to Riley. It goes like this. Dear Riley, happy 35th birthday to you, my magical winter solstice babe. Even if you were covered in loaf, I would still think you're a total cutie. I love you, your incredible mind, and the fact that you introduced me to the Star Trek universe. You're the captain of my heart. Don't change a thing. Love, Danielle.
Well, you know you're a cutie when it shines through the loaf. That's what I'll say.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if my cute is loaf-proof.
I think you would be cute in loaf, Adam.
I don't know. I don't think I have the face for loaf.
I think you'd be a nice high-carb snack.
Wow. Well, it sounds like Riley and Danielle are celebrating a great year to come. If you have a message that you would like transmitted to our myriad viewers, you can take it over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where commercial messages are $200 and personal messages are $100, both of which are a great way to support our program well into the new year.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda? Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, Sisko's barely in this episode, but he's my drunk Shimoda because of his interaction with Rom, who's crying at work. We are made to believe that Sisko is one of the great Star Trek leaders and captains. He's many people's favorite, but he shows zero empathy for what's going on with Rom, and and in fact tells him to carry on after seeing that he's crying at work.
That is a very Picard reaction to that phenomenon.
It really is, and it's so Picard that it made me wonder how much thought was put into that moment. I know that it's a slide whistle, like it's played for laughs, and it is funny.
Yeah.
But it's cruel also.
Yeah, it's weird that the scene where Rom and Lita are their saddest is the silliest moment in this episode about a bunch of money hungry trolls running around.
These people aren't their friends. That's what I'm getting from this episode.
Well, what have the Ferengi done to earn friendship, Adam?
That's fair.
That's what I would ask you.
I think Lita deserves to be happy.
Yeah.
What about you, Ben?
My drunk Shimoda is Rom, and it's for the whole waiver of profit and property gambit. And I think that this is maybe like the thing that we've criticized most about this character, is that he's kind of written as a punchline. And one thing that you are taught in an improv class is like whatever character you wind up playing in your scene can't be dumb. Like the joke about your character being that your character is super dumb is tempting when you're starting out in improv, because it's like, oh, what if this guy was really dumb? That would be funny, right? And the reason you're discouraged by an instructor from playing a character that way is that if you do that every single time, it's never going to be funny.
Yeah.
And Rom is a dumb, but I think the reason that it doesn't work for me is that like they've started to try and write him out of that. Like, oh, he's actually a brilliant engineer. He's actually like got a lot of heart. But if that's true, like he can't keep doing super duper dumb shit. Like,
but Rom is a dumb, but dumbs deserve love too.
Right, but I also don't think he's this dumb. I don't think he's dumb enough to be given the slightest of pushes by Dax and suddenly be like, oh shit, I gotta really stick it to my future wife because that's my culture.
Yeah, like, but I think we both know people who are work smart and social dumb. Like, I think these are just aspects
of one
him.
I'm one of those people.
I know. Like, why don't you recognize this? Because you're social dumb.
I think that this is past social dumb. Like, if they wanted to have an episode about Ferengi prenups, I think that is an interesting and fun thing to tell a story about. But the story that they wind up telling is just, boy, Rom's real dumb, right?
You know what? Up until now, Rom's entire story has been about the rejection of his culture and the replacement of it with something he sees as better, something that enriches his life more.
Right.
For him to be pushed over with Dax's feather back into subscribing to this way of thinking, I think it's not character honest for him. And it would have been far more interesting if this was a B story that was about Rom's rejection of that again. Like, this is a thing that Ferengi do. This is an experience I had with an ex-wife that was bad, and this is why I'm not doing it, in spite of the many cultural pressures that he feels. And instead, it's the exact opposite of that. You can still have conflict. It's just a different conflict.
What if it had been a story about his Moogie feeling really strongly about him getting one of these
prenups and him disagreeing with her.
Yeah, like how fucking weird is Moogie if she is so progressive in this way that she is with Zek and still super conservative in the marriage aspect with Rom?
I think that would have been an interesting story to tell. Yeah. I think there's a bunch of interesting directions you can take this, but I thought a lot in this episode about how Quark has all these instincts toward progressivism that he's like constantly at war with in himself. Like they're always showing him like doing a nice thing for a character as a counterpoint to what a scumbag he is most of the time.
Right.
And that's not Rom. And telling this story about Rom felt a little bit like a bad fit, you know?
He's too suggestible. I thought I knew who Rom was before this episode, and now I don't.
Gotta get that gold press lap. Get that gold press lap. Am I right?
Guys, have you ever nicked your nuts trying to make yourself look better in the buff? Who hasn't? Look, you can be as careful as you can around there, but if you don't have the right tools, all it takes is one slip-up to turn your bag of grapes into a slashed-up mess. Do you want to go to the emergency room and explain to them what happened? Do you? Do you? I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. These tools are designed to do one thing and one thing well. Trim the body hair in your most sensitive areas safely. The Lawnmower 5.0 is the latest bunch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads. A standard one for taking a little off the top and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Spring cleaning doesn't just apply to the nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit plus Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. If you've got a mom or a mother figure in your life, you know how hard it is to choose a gift to give them that says everything that you want to say. But maybe the goal should be to give them something that doesn't say anything at all, while at the same time saying 1,000 words. Because that's what pictures are supposed to do, right? That's a famous adage. Well, what if I told you that you could give this person in your life a gift that was infinity times 1,000 words? That's a limitless amount of pictures that play on a continuous loop on an Aura frame. Because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of pictures, you're giving them a story every time you send one to it. And it's so easy to do. You just open up the app, click on their Aura frame, add a picture from your library, and in seconds, you're making your gift new again. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com. Use that code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Gotta get that gold press lap. Get that gold press lap.
Well, you know, another thing that has consequences, Adam, is the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets.
That's right.
It's how we decide how our next episode will be consumed. And our next episode is Season 5, Episode 21, Soldiers of the Empire. On a mission for the Klingon Empire, Worf realizes that his friend General Martok is no longer fit to lead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to pass the warrior's physical with an eye like that.
Yeah. Well, we are currently on Square 18, that Quark's bar that we slipped down to via the space butthole. Just ahead, we have another space butthole on Square 21 that could get us stuck with a Darmok episode.
Mm. Everyone loved the first time we did that.
Was that one of the controversial ones?
Oh, yeah, people hated that up.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
People don't like it when we break format.
Fuck them. This is our game. This is our podcast.
I'm not going to go that far as to saying fuck them. I like a format that I've grown accustomed to, too, as a viewer of a podcast. So I get it. But also, it's fun every once in a while to do something different.
I think that's the point of the game of buttholes. Sometimes it's painful to roll a bad bone.
Yeah. Well, why don't you roll that bone? Figure it out.
Okay.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I think we could also potentially hit a banger. So depends on what I roll here. But here I go. And I have rolled a one, Adam.
Shula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
So we are on square 19.
All right.
It's almost like I was ghostly rolling for you.
Yeah.
It's a regular episode next week, but peek behind the pod, probably going to be a bit of a drunk episode as well, because we're going to record it really soon after we stop recording this one.
That's right. That's how we like it, though.
Yeah. We'd like to thank all of the friends of DeSoto who contribute on a monthly basis to the production of this program. You guys are the best.
Yeah, it's the end of the year. I think a lot of people at the end of the year are thinking about the things that they've supported the year behind and what else they might be interested in supporting in the year ahead. And we would ask that if you enjoy what we do on The Greatest Generation, you support it over at MaximumFun.org/donate.
Just yesterday, as of this recording, I went over to the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles and dropped off the 60-something Lego kits that you and I bought to donate to their playroom there for the kids who are stuck in the hospital.
You didn't tell me that. That's great.
Yeah, that's something that we were only able to do because of the incredibly generous support of the Friends of DeSoto. So we're trying to take this goodwill and spread it around as much as we can. And they, like the people at the drop off, like I scheduled my drop off, and I went, and when I was pulling the boxes and boxes of Legos out of the back of my car, they were like, "Wow, holy crap! I hope you guys make a regular thing of this. This was really great." They were really thrilled. So,
wow.
I just wanted to say thanks to the Friends of DeSoto for supporting us and enabling us to do a thing like that.
Wow, that's pretty excellent.
And we should also thank Adam Ragusa, who makes music for our program. He, of course, based his music off of that of Dark Materia, who made the original Picard song. Adam Ragusa quitting his job as a college professor to go full-time YouTube cook.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, pretty great. Search for Adam Ragusa on YouTube, and your dinner tomorrow night taken care of.
When you're Adam Ragusa, you season the two-week notice. and not the mailbox you put it in.
Yeah, you pour white wine into almost every resignation letter you leave on your boss's desk.
To understand what we're talking about, you got to go over to Adam Ragusa's YouTube channel. It's great.
We got to thank our buddy Bill Tilly, who makes trading cards about just about every episode of the show. I think every single episode, right?
Every single one. I don't think he's missed one. And it would be fine if he did. If anyone deserves a break, it's Bill Tilly.
But he ain't taking them.
No.
He's on Twitter at BillTilly1973, and he uses the hashtag GreatestGen when he posts his posts. There are also lots of social media groups on Discord and Reddit and Facebook. All these evil companies have a group of Friends of DeSoto operating inside them.
That's right. They're groups waiting to spring into action and overthrow them. With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. That is considering going sleeveless.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.